It's the biggest prize of all the toss-up states. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News. So both former President Trump and Vice President Harris will campaign in Pennsylvania 3 weeks and a day before the election.
Those on the Trump team say that no matter where he rallies, they get a lot of viewership online. So they think that allows them to take some risk in their strategy. But Trump is paying attention to the swing states. Today, he's hosting a town hall in Oaks, Pennsylvania, and that is a state that could decide this election.
That's Fox Business Network's Madison Allworth. Vice President Harris will go to Erie, touting a new economic plan she calls an opportunity agenda for black men, as polls show more of those voters more open to supporting Trump this time around. Israel's coming under more fire from rockets shooting them down from Lebanon the day after a drone got through the Iron Dome defense.
Four Israeli soldiers killed and 51 injured when a Hezbollah attack drone slammed into a dining hall at a military base north of Tel Aviv. And officials saying this is yet another reason why Israeli forces have to continue their ground operation against Hezbollah.
Fox's Trey Yingston, Haifa. The Lebanese Red Cross says an Israeli airstrike today has killed at least 18 people. The U.S. is going to send Israel a new missile defense system to further protect against Iran, and American troops will go there to help operate it. Some rivers are still at flood stage or still rising in Florida days after Hurricane Milton hit, leading to new evacuations north of Tampa, and there are still about 400,000 power outages.
It's been tricky, especially where electrical lines are surrounded by standing water. Anna Gibbs is with Duke Energy.
It is so flooded that we are unable right now to re-energize because, of course, and electricity and water do not mix.
Area power utilities are expecting a nearly full restoration by Thursday, if not sooner.
Fox's Evan Brown. In parts of North Carolina devastated by Hurricane Helene a few weeks ago, there are still about 100,000 homes and businesses without running water. America's listening to Fox News.
Life takes a toll on all of our bodies. It's inevitable and part of growing older. Whether it's sitting for hours at our computers or working a physical job, our bodies pay the price. It's hard to accept, but at some point, the pain gives us no choice. Now, we can't turn Father Time back, but there is an effective way to turn back the clock on pain, and that is Relief Factor. It was developed by doctors, and Relief Factor helps support your body's response to inflammation. And the difference, instead of masking pain, Relief Factor helps eliminate it for good. And it's 100% drug-free. If the pain that comes with living a full life is affecting you, do what I've done. Turn back the clock on pain with Relief Factor. Their three-week quick start is $19.95, less than a dollar a day. And when you feel good, it's amazing how much more you can get out of life. Visit ReliefFactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF, 800-4-RELIEF. Try it for $19.95. While we can't stop aging, not yet, we can stop pain with Relief.
Broadcasting Americanism from the York Heating and Air Conditioning and ACUMA.com studios. 560 KBLU.
From the News 11 Information Desk, I'm Zachary Moran-Norris. The Yuma Police Department hosted their 22nd annual GAIN event on Saturday. It stands for Getting Arizona Involved in Neighborhoods, and it's held every year by police agencies statewide to promote awareness, safety, and neighborhood unity. Police, fire, and military agencies display their equipment to the public, allowing families to climb inside and interact with law enforcement personnel. And Crossroads Mission hosted their annual Jubilee event on Saturday. It's one of the Crossroads Mission's biggest fundraisers, with proceeds going towards their new men's shelter, as well as to celebrate 65 years of service. It took place at Britton Farms, with the theme being the Roaring Twenties, which was backed by popular demand. And it's officially spooky season. The Yuma Nightmares Haunted House officially reopened its doors this weekend after being closed for 5 years. It'll be open every weekend leading up to Halloween, and will also be open the day of Halloween. Catch us on News 11 tonight at 5, 6, and 10 p.m. for your latest local news, weather, and sports.
During Cybersecurity Awareness Month, LifeLock wants to give you helpful tips to protect your identity. Using multi-factor authentication can be a line of defense to help protect your personal information, but LifeLock offers comprehensive protection against identity theft. LifeLock not only alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information, but also fixes issues that arise, guaranteed or your money back. Protect your identity today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use my name, Clay, as the promo code. Terms apply.
You may know me as Ruben Gallego, but I've had a lot of titles over the years. First, son, or mijo, by my single immigrant mom who worked so hard to make ends meet, and brother by my three incredible sisters. I've been called janitor, line cook, construction worker, doing any job I could to help out since we didn't have much. I earned the title graduate from Harvard University.
I was called infantryman in the Marines when my company took some of the heaviest losses in Iraq. I'm called congressman, proudly representing Arizona the past 10 years. But my favorite title of all is dad to my two beautiful kids whose future I'm fighting for every day. That's why today, my title is candidate for Senate. I'm fighting to lower costs and secure our border. I'm Ruben Gallego, candidate for U.S. Senate, and I approve this message because for me, it's never been about titles. It's about standing up for hardworking Arizonans like you.
Paid for by Gallego for Arizona.
The following program on 560 KBLU is a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters, nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. I'm in studio here with Thomas Sparks, also an attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson, and a former JAG attorney with the military, or I should say the United States Marines. Welcome, Mr. Sparks.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to discuss this morning foreign policy, and there's this great debate between Tom Bolton and Vivek Ramaswamy about how much America should be engaged in foreign affairs on an ongoing basis. And to start it off, I want to listen to a clip from RFK, who is not part of the debate, but discusses a little bit about the Ukraine war. And I think he puts a good perspective on what is going on there and whether or not it should have happened and how we should perceive it going forward.
This is a war that should have never happened. It's a war the Russians tried repeatedly to settle on terms that were very, very beneficial to Ukraine and us. The major thing they wanted was for us to keep NATO out of the Ukraine. The big military contractors want to add new countries to NATO all the time. Why? Because then that country has to conform its military purchases to NATO weapon specifications, which means certain companies, Northrop Grumman, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Boeing, and Lockheed get a trapped market. In March of 2022, we committed $113 billion. Just to give you an example, we could have built a home for almost every homeless person in this country. We then committed another $24 billion since then, 2 months ago, and now President Biden's asking for another $60 billion. But the big, big expenses are going to come after the war, when we have to rebuild all the things that we destroyed. Mitch McConnell was asked, can we really afford to spend $113 billion to Ukraine? He said, don't worry. It's not really going to Ukraine.
It's going to American defense manufacturers.
So he just admitted it's a money laundering scheme. And who do you think owns every one of those companies? BlackRock. So Tim Scott, during the Republican debate, said, don't worry, it's not a gift to Ukraine, it's a loan. So raise your hand if you think that loan's ever getting paid back. Yeah, of course it's not. So why do they call it a loan? Because if they call it a loan, they can impose loan conditions. And what are the loan conditions that we impose on? Number one, an extreme austerity program, so that if you're poor in Ukraine, you're going to be poor forever. Number two, most important, Ukraine has to put all of its government-owned assets up for sale to multinational corporations, including all of its agricultural land, the biggest single asset in Europe, in Ukraine. There's been 1,000 years of war fought over that land. It's the richest farmland in the world. It's the breadbasket of Europe. 500,000 kids, almost, Ukrainian kids, have died to keep that land as part of Ukraine. They almost certainly didn't know about this loan condition. They've already sold 30% of it. The buyers were DuPont, Cargill, and Monsanto. Who do you think owns all of those companies? Yeah, BlackRock. And then in December, President Biden gave out the contract to rebuild Ukraine. And who do you think got that contract? BlackRock. So they're doing this right in front of us. They don't even care that we know anymore, because they know that they can get away with it. And how do they know that? Because they have a strategy. And that strategy is an old, old strategy, which is they keep us at war with each other. They keep us hating on each other. They keep the Republicans and Democrats fighting each other, black against white, and all these divisions that they sow.
If you like this video and you want to learn more about me and the movement that...
So, Thomas, you've seen that video before. I've watched it multiple times, and it makes the hairs on the back of my neck stand up every time, and not in a good way. I just get so frustrated with what is going on right beneath our nose and this power grab that's going on. But being part of the military and seeing it from the inside out, what's your take? I want to know what stood out to you and what you may want to say in response and rebuttal to RFK's remarks as to the motivation for, number one, the war beginning, and number two, the United States' involvement in the war.
Sure. I think what I'll say is the military is wholly uninvolved with the higher politics that go on above them. Like, the job of the military is to be a weapon, and is to be it's a lawful force, lawful lethal force that we can impose on people to obtain our political advantage. That's the purpose of the military. So the weapon doesn't really, it's just like gun control, right? Like, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people. And the military is very much like the weapon that America uses.
So but it would seem like, because the military has the human component to it, mm-hmm. there would be a portion of it that would try to encourage the combatants. Now, I know that there aren't supposed to be U.S. military combatants in Ukraine, but obviously there is a potential for that to be there, and there should be an overall support of the commander-in-chief and in his decisions, at least regarding military actions. And regardless of whether or not you support him on his political views, you must support him with regard to his decisions for national security and international affairs. How does that go over when you're expected to not think and just... Are you expected to not think and just acquiesce to what the position is?
Yeah, I'm sure behind closed doors there's a lot of frustration, you know, when you've got disagreements between strategy and tactics. But that is the ultimate hallmark of the military, is it's a place where you can be very passionate about what you think is right and what, you know, what the proper course of action is. But then as soon as the commander says, thank you for that opinion, but we're doing it this way, everybody is expected and does follow those orders. And that results from a long history of war fighting. Like, if you question the commander, that's a certain way for everybody to die. So that's where that comes from.
Okay, so how does that go over when you have your own independent mind and ability to... It's not like you're a jury where you're sequestered from outside information and you see what's going on in the outside mm-hmm. world and the underlying motives. How does that affect the morale of the individuals?
Yeah, I think morale generally goes down. If people don't believe in what they're fighting for, I think it's the human nature to not be as passionate and fight as hard. But I think, my opinion is that the average, even not just the average Marine or soldier or airman, has no idea / decision-making power over the Ukraine foreign policy. I think that extends pretty far up the chain of command, where even a lot of your combatant commanders don't really have a lot of control about where they are, but they, once they're there, they have to make do with the tactics that they're given. So I do, and we'll hear this later as we queue up some other clips, but I think the decision-making power is wholly political, and if you want to fix it, you need to fix it at the political level and not the military level.
So what there's this debate then from Tom Bolton and Vivek Ramaswamy about the U.S.'s involvement around the world and acting as the police of the world and determining the outcome of many conflicts that are going on. Now, it seems like we do pick and choose which conflicts that we get engaged in. And obviously, we're engaged in the conflict with Ukraine and Russia, and many have said that it's a proxy war between us and Russia. We are fighting Russia. But why? Why are we deciding to fight Russia? Russia did not invade and cross our borders. They're not taking away our lands. Ukraine isn't a part of NATO. And so even if you agree with the whole underpinning of NATO and the concept that an attack on one is an attack on all, Ukraine is not a part of NATO. In fact, it would be a very good argument, and one that has been made by Russia many times, that the continued enrollment of other countries into NATO and stretching the NATO border closer and closer to the front line of Russian territory was what provoked the war in the first place. So why are we acting as if this is a war between us and Russia by supplying Ukrainians and sending them off with our weapons to go fight the Russians?
Yeah, I think that's a legitimate question to ask. Is could have been solved another way? Like, did it ever have to end up with this war? I mean, that's the main criticism. Is according to RFK in his video that this is a war that could have been solved over a diplomatic conversation across a table, and we're past that point. And now I guess one side of the story would say, well, we've got to stop somewhere, so why not just stop right now and go try to get back to, you know, the diplomatic table? And I know that's been a talking point for Donald Trump, is that he said if he gets elected, that war would be over in a day. Like, I'd get back to the table and I'd end it.
Yeah, and that's a nice soundbite for Donald Trump, and it's a typical thing that he would say, that, you know, he can snap his fingers and wave a magic wand and cure all the world's ills.
Sure.
And that's one of the things that really rubs me wrong about any time I listen to Donald Trump, is that although I've seen that his policies in general work, his rhetoric is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody has that authority. Nobody has that power to stop this in an instant. And it just makes him sound like a buffoon to say that he could, that he does have that type of authority. If he did, it makes me wonder how, you know? Although I don't give it much credence at all, because he says a lot of things that he could stop or that he did perfectly. He's never made a mistake ever in any of his decisions, politically or otherwise. But getting off of that, Vivek Ramaswamy has talked about allowing the borders where they stand now, or at least the territory that has been gained by Russia and Ukraine, to stand as they are, and to then get concessions from Russia, not to continue in its alliance with China militarily, stop doing military exercises with them, stop receiving military supplies from them, in exchange for us stopping to supply the Ukrainians with armaments and continuing this war.
Yeah, I think that you definitely have to get something for something, right? Like, if we just say we're going to stop supplying Ukraine, Russia gets its, you know, it gets with the land it collects, and it continues to be influenced by China, which I think is the other half of that proxy war that you're talking about, where we're supplying Ukraine. Russia, I don't believe, is a standalone force. Like, they've got, I don't want to call, you know, be as dramatic as say, like, it's a new Axis power, but I think you can trend in that direction pretty easily if some things go wrong.
Right, and so let's say that their alignment right now is with China, mm-hmm. which is our biggest fear, because China's got the economic might and the military might, at least from a Navy perspective, mm-hmm. to really wreak havoc around the world, especially in the United States. They have an alliance with Iran, mm-hmm. right, which has showed no moral compass whatsoever in its willingness to aid terrorists and to just call out exactly what its mission is, and that is to destroy America and Israel. And then it's got an alliance with other countries like North Korea. Or perhaps not an alliance, but at least...
Friendly terms.
Yeah, friendly terms. An open conversation that, that they would be on the same side of that conflict. So I guess the question is, do we just concede that Russia gets to keep this land from Ukraine and essentially then give them this set a precedence that if an aggressor country takes land, we're not going to do anything about it. The world going to stand by and allow that to happen. Essentially what happened with Neville Chamberlain when he was negotiating with Hitler and he wanted the Sudetenland. And he said, yes, go ahead, take that, and we won't do anything about it. And that just led us right into World War II. Aggressors never get satisfied with the first chunk of land that they get. It's just going to set a precedence to take more and more land until somebody stands up and stops them. That's the question, and that is the real debate. Do we allow that to happen and stop the war, supposedly, or do we continue to fight and say, no, wrong is wrong and right is right, and we're going to go in there and fight for what's right regardless of the human cost and the economic cost around the world? We're going to have to take a break. This is Life, Death, and the Law. We'll be back with more.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Don't miss out. Deason Garner and Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar this October 11th at the Foothills Library. Doors open at 2 p.m. and we will start at 2:30. Achieve peace of mind and learn the importance of planning so you can avoid the consuming probate process.
Yuma weather with sunshine and 97 on Monday, 66 Monday night, sunny and 96 on Tuesday, 67 Tuesday night, Wednesday, sunny and 94.
This house seems very hot. Ugh, the AC is blowing hot air.
Call Air Solutions of Yuma for residential and commercial HVAC services. They'll repair, do maintenance and installations with their experienced and professional technicians. Air Solutions of Yuma can help your air temperature and quality to make all the difference in this heat. Local authorized Bryant dealer. Contact them today. Air Solutions of Yuma. Find them on Facebook or call for an appointment. 928-627-1343. Air Solutions of Yuma will cool you down.
Wildlife around the globe needs help. And when you help protect them, you become a friend of the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance. A real friend. The kind of friend you want to thank. And not just with a card or a text, but with a song.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend. Thank you for being a friend.
From your friends at the San Diego Zoo Wildlife Alliance, thank you for helping protect wildlife around the globe. Without you, there's no them. Learn more at sdzwa.org/friend.
Thank you for being a friend.
My dear young military veteran, I owe you for every liberty that this blessed United States of America affords to all Americans and to immigrant military-connected youths and family such as my own.
This Memorial Day, Lemonade Delsa gave a tribute that truly speaks from the heart, introducing My Dear Young Military Veteran, a poignant poem celebrating the courage and dedication of our heroes. My Dear Young Military Veteran, now available for purchase. Beautifully printed on laminated cards, perfect for sharing and preserving. Read the words that embrace the spirit and gift it to those who gave us everything. Family, friends, even yourself. Visit LemonadeDelsa.com to order your card today or invite the author to your gathering to hear it live. With every purchase, you're supporting local veterans and others in need in our community. My Dear Young Military Veteran, now available at LemonadeDelsa.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, estate planning attorney with Deason, Garner, and Hanson. And we help people get their finances in order. But first of all, we're talking about our country getting its finances in order. We've funded the Ukrainian war with $100+ billion of aid. And right now we're looking at an election. Maybe after you hear this, the election will be over. But either way, I think there's a good argument that that $100+ billion could have been used domestically as opposed to militarily over in Ukraine. And it might even be termed a big money laundering scheme, that it's actually filtering through Ukraine to go to the military-industrial complex and to make people that create weapons very wealthy, or even potentially a land grab in Ukraine for foreign countries, including the United States and companies that are based here, to purchase Ukrainian land. So, Thomas, I'd like you to play the devil's advocate on this. Why should we continue to participate in this conflict in Ukraine?
Sure. I think that you've got Russia, who interests are not aligned with ours. Oftentimes, they're pushing into a foreign country and trying to spread, you know, their influence and power into other countries. And, you know, if you want to go down the train of where that could lead to a new Soviet Union. And that could be another world power that emerges, much like China, who, you know, do not like the United States. And I could see an interest in wanting to prevent that. Now, I think what we talked about in the first segment a little bit is the means by which it's being fought. I think people don't like the idea of fighting proxy wars, but it's not something that we haven't done in the past to success. Like, look at the Korean War, very much a fight on a foreign country that was being backed by China, South Koreans being backed by us. The whole war was fought over stopping the spread of the ideology of communism. And, I mean, the success of that war was we stayed pretty much neutral. The North was still heavily influenced by communism. The South was a capitalist country, and it remains that way to this day. And I can just see very similar parallels to Ukraine-Russia.
So I see some parallels there. I guess one of the parallels that I would draw in favor of Vivek's solution to what's going on with this conflict right now is that we draw the borders where they are now with a territory that has been occupied by Russia and say, stop there. We're going to make some ceasefire arrangement, because in Korea it's just a ceasefire. There is no peace treaty. Mm-hmm. It was never really a total war. It was a conflict, and there was no total peace. It's a ceasefire. So we're going to arrange a ceasefire where the Russian troops stop engaging in, you know, firing missiles over, killing civilians, destroying the infrastructure of Ukraine, and likewise Ukraine stops doing it to Russia and accepts the fact that the occupied land now becomes part of Russia. The difference seems to be, so that could be one solution, and that's where it's similar with North and South Korea, in that we came to that, and there's this demilitarized zone, mm-hmm. where there's this gray area right there, and nobody gets to occupy that area, and it's going to separate the two countries, and now they get to go and operate on their own form of government. That has seemed to work for South Korea. It seems to be disastrous for North Korea. I don't know how willing the North Koreans were in electing that form of government and agreeing to that settlement, mm-hmm. but they're certainly worse off for it. And so in that sense, are we just forsaking those that are on the Russian side of the Ukrainian territory, that boundary that's been drawn?
Well, I think you'd have to look at, like, whose fault that is. Like, that's not a result of a war. That's a result of a poor political scheme that they happen to be victims of. So, you know, North Korea is not where it's at because there's a ceasefire and because the Korean War was fought. They're fought there because they have a dictator who doesn't care about his people. He cares about himself.
So it's because of the politics after the ceasefire and
before, I would say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the difference between North Korea, well, Korea in general, the Korean War, was that there were two competing ideologies for the government, and the United States supported one ideology, and that was free market, and the other, China, supported the communist ideology, and we allowed the Koreans essentially to just half it. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we allowed how much their participation actually was involved in that right. negotiation, but either way, that's what it resulted in. In this case, it doesn't seem like the Ukrainians really participated at all. There's no Ukrainians that are fighting to become part of Russia, or at least a independent territory from Ukraine. I don't know. Am I missing something? It seems like it's totally one-sided with Russia. It's less of two countries fighting proxy wars. It's Russia fighting for its independent interest and to incorporate into its own country Ukrainian territory, and then the United States fighting to keep that from being sucked up into Russia.
Yeah, well, I still see a pretty strong parallel between Korea, because you had, you know, North Korea being influenced by China, saying, hey, we should stay communist, look at all these benefits, the capitalists are going to ruin the world, like it's an evil ideology, the same thing we say about them. They stir up, you know, strife. The North says, okay, yeah, we like this communist thing, let's go for it. And they keep charging into the South. The South is rebuffing them, mm-hmm. and saying, we don't want to be communist. And that's kind of, I see a very strong parallel between Ukraine and Russia there. Like, Ukraine rebuffing an attack on their land.
So do you think that the occupied territories of Ukraine actually accept their occupation and want to be part of Russia?
Yeah, that I don't know. I mean, I've heard, you know, some reports. I know Vivek has said this many times, that those border towns between Russia and Ukraine are essentially Russian. They speak Russian. Maybe they would be willing to be Russian and have it be consumed.
Uh-huh. There was a vote.
Yeah, sure, like a vote. Vladimir Putin, like, won 100% of that vote.
Yeah. Some reporters went in afterwards asked some of the Ukrainians that were supposedly part of that vote, that were part of the regions, the Donbass region, and asked, what do you think about the vote? And they said, what vote?
Yeah, which, I mean, that's pretty much par for the course, I think, for Vladimir Putin. He's been one of the most, you know, popular elected world leaders for many years now. You wonder how that would be. Kind of like Xi Jinping, he's also very popular yeah. amongst his people. But we're past the, you know, the Donbas province now, and we're fighting in Kyiv. I don't know if we actually have like soldiers in Kyiv now, but like they're getting bombed and air raided, mm-hmm. and so we're very much past these border towns, and I think that's the big issue that I can see with the conflict, is you've got Russia pushing in further than, you know, probably they ever would have pushed had we just done this diplomatic strategy.
So if you were king for the day, mm-hmm. and you had Donald Trump's magic wand and could settle this issue,
yeah,
how would you settle it?
I'd push Russia back to what they originally had.
Okay, so you mean Russia's original boundaries, mm-hmm. Russia's territory? Mm-hmm. Okay, so does that include Crimea?
I don't know. I'm not educated enough on like their foreign policy.
Well, Crimea was invaded in 2012. Mm-hmm. And Barack Obama was the president at that time, mm-hmm. and stood by and did nothing.
Oh, right, right.
And so that province is extremely rich. It has a lot, just off the coast of Crimea, there's a lot of natural gas. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Burisma was one of the countries that was going to go in there and harvest a lot of that gas and those natural resources, oil and gas reserves. Mm-hmm. And that's where we get into the entanglements with peddling influence through the Biden administration and Hunter Biden being part of Burisma. Mm-hmm, yeah. But so Crimea was occupied by Russian troops, and then, you know, they denied it at first. They denied that they were in Russian. You know, all they did was just tore off the flag that was on the shoulder of the uniforms, and then went in with their same tanks and uniforms, and it was very obvious what was going on. And after a while, they settled in, and there wasn't a lot of opposition to it. The United States didn't supply the Ukrainians with a bunch of military weapons to defend themselves and fight it off. If the Ukrainians would have wanted to, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's under a Russian occupation to this day, and it's kind of been accepted as a status quo. And mm-hmm. so now this new invasion is for the Donbass region. Am mm-hmm. I pronouncing it right?
Yeah, I think so.
And so I was looking at the map, and I've looked at it on several occasions. It's about 45,000 square miles. So it's not an insignificant portion of land, right? Mm-hmm. And so they have incorporated this area, and they say that it's either, one, independent, it's not Ukrainian anymore, it's an independent territory and nation, mm-hmm. or it's going to be part of Russia. Either way, it's not going to be part of Ukraine. And what's interesting here is if we don't think that that is a feasible option to settle the dispute there and say, okay, fine, we'll allow that to be the outcome, then what is the alternative? Because politicians, Tim Scott included, and you know Joe Biden and many others, even Mitch McConnell says that we're not giving them all of this money, these hundreds of billions of dollars. We're loaning it to them. Mm-hmm. But loaning it to them on what terms? Because in 2021, prior to the war, foreign companies and foreign individuals weren't allowed to own agricultural land in Ukraine. Since then, that policy has changed. Mm-hmm. And it's somewhere around 17 million acres of land has been acquired by foreign entities since that time. That is the equivalent of 40,000 square miles. Mm-hmm. And so the amount of territory that Russia occupies now since the beginning of the war is the same amount of territory that has been purchased by foreign countries, much of which are United States-based, sure. because of the policy that the United States has imposed on them as a condition for the loan that they've given them to fund this. And so what is happening is United States companies are becoming rich both in the military funding by producing the actual arsenal that is being used by Ukraine. Mm-hmm. It's just taxpayer money going into Ukraine to buy the weapons that are produced by the United States. Mm-hmm. And so the taxpayers are basically just paying all of these companies, Lockheed Martin, Boeing, tell me another.
Grumman.
Northrop Grumman.
Yeah, I think that's one. Raytheon.
Raytheon. Mm-hmm. So those companies, it's essentially one way for them to get the taxpayer money from the United States to use their weapons in Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And then another way for big companies like BlackRock to go in and acquire what has been the most sought-after agriculture land in Europe, and we are the ones that are actually occupying Ukraine through this subterfuge of actually trying to free the Ukrainians.
Yeah, I think that I don't think it's super black and white, where like the war is either this big hypocritical, you know, money grab, or there's no, you know, moral, maybe what's the word I'm looking for, like moral upside to being there. I think I could very well see it being a group of people who take advantage of a situation where they can push forward their personal interest while hiding behind a facade that they're a part of this, you know, altruistic effort. But I think that there are people who truly do have the altruism to be there for, you know, what I would call like the right reason, to differentiate that from just money reasons. You know, no one likes to see someone come into your hometown with artillery and tanks and say, this is ours now. And you've got people, I think, who, especially even some U.S. citizens who are fighting for like Ukrainian forces, who
right, just voluntarily just go voluntarily. Over there. Yeah, yeah. They feel that it's immoral for Russia to do what it's doing, and I'm not trying to make a moral argument for what Russia is doing. What I'm trying to say is, we live in an imperfect world. Mm-hmm. We live in an era where people are bad actors and they impose consequences on the rest of us. Mm-hmm. And the question is, how do we react? Do we just continue the carnage and fight for what we think is correct? Or do we find some sort of way to settle the conflict and move on? How much worse off would these individuals be that are in the occupied territories of Ukraine if they would have settled the war and negotiated a peace 2 years ago, mm-hmm. as opposed to now? You know, a million people overall are dead or injured on both sides because of this conflict. And that's just the very beginning of it. But we're going to have to take a break,
yeah,
and I want to come back on that thought. This is Life, Death, and the Law.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Want to hear more Life, Death, and the Law? You can find it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube, or any other platform you listen to your podcasts.
Once upon a time, air conditioning was simple. It blew cold air, or it didn't. Today, air conditioning is more than cooling. Healthy, conditioned air is essential. When people ask me who I trust, I tell them, in Yuma, the only thing you need to know about air conditioning is Hansberger Refrigeration. Find them at HansbergerRefrig.com. That's Hansberger, R-E-F-R-I-G.com.
Hansberger Refrigeration and Electric. Hansberger, count on us.
Reduce your inflation exasperation now at Cars and Carts. No huge cost increases here. The manufacturer of Evolution Golf Carts has authorized significant price reductions on all new Evolution Golf Carts, including the awesome new D5 model with a new sleek front-end design, front rear disc brakes, new chassis design with a 7-foot wheelbase, tilted steering wheel, and updated touchscreen display. This golf cart is nice, and now at insanely low prices. Cars and Carts, the place to go. Call today, 928-726-2286. Cars and Carts, 2899 South Sherry Avenue in Yuma.
Our Arizona Corporation Commissioners make water choices that impact us all. Whether our children are forced to time their showers, whether we rip up gardens or store away bathwater, this reality may be closer than we think. You have the power to decide who leads Arizona's water future. You can protect this precious resource by voting in the ACC election. Make your voice heard this election year for your children, our families, our future. Paid for by Environmental Defense Fund.
This is 560 KBLU.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Welcome back to Life, Death, and the Law. I'm Sean Garner, attorney with Deason, Garner, Hanson, and this is Thomas Sparks here to my left, and we're talking about the Ukrainian war as if we actually know all the underlying motives and the correct outcome for this conflict. So, okay, and that's where I want to introduce Vivek Ramaswamy. He's talking at this debate between John Bolton, and John Bolton is a advisor for four different presidential administrations.
I do think that the path to truth runs through free speech and open debate, and I'm hoping that's exactly what we open up tonight. As the resolution is drafted, it's very hard to disagree on the face of it that the U.S. should use diplomatic power and military might to advance America's interests. That's hard to disagree with, and I wouldn't do that. But I think the essence of what's at stake is whether or not the United States, and the way I read it, actually at its core meaning, is whether or not the United States has a role to play as a global policeman. And the answer to that question for me is an absolute no. I have little doubt that Ambassador Bolton and I actually share the same goal for the United States of America and the question of our foreign policy, which is to make the United States of America a stronger nation. But where I think we have some disagreements, and at times deep disagreements, is in the question of how we exactly do it. I appreciated the reference to American history, and I frankly learned a few things from your opening remarks, from history dating back to 250 years ago. What I'd like to do in my opening is to refer to the history of the last 25 years and the results of that interventionist foreign policy. Let's start with just the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. There's the financial cost, $8 trillion on those two wars alone. That doesn't include other engagements in other parts of the world, including the recent Ukraine costs or other parts of the Middle East. That's at a moment where our national debt is $34 trillion, well on our way to the interest payments on our national debt being the largest line item on our federal budget. That won't fall on Ambassador Bolton's or my generation's shoulders so much as it will on the generation of the cadets who are in the audience today. But it's not just the financial cost of those wars, of course. It's the human cost, including the cost to Americans themselves. 8,000, nearly 7,000 to 8,000 American lives lost. Men and women who died in those wars. 53,000 Americans who were wounded or injured. 30,000 more deaths if you count the suicides just afterwards. And if the financial costs and the human costs weren't persuasive enough about the folly of those wars, I would further add that the crisis in Europe, for those who care about the strength of our allies, the mass migration crisis in Europe today is actually in part a direct function of our failed intervention in the Middle East. A lot of the mass migration from Muslim countries is the direct consequence of destabilization that the United States played a role in seeding. Now, I have no doubt that the people in the audience here are ready to make the ultimate sacrifice for the country, should our country require it. That's why I respect all of you who are here for what you do. That being said, we cannot in good conscience send America's sons and daughters to go die in a war if we haven't identified what the objective of that war really is. And the reason I'm against the resolution as I see it, which is whether or not the United States should be the world's global policeman, is the evidence suggests that we have failed miserably. For that $8 trillion, for those 7,000 lives, for the 53,000 injuries, for the 30,000 more suicides, for the aggregate chaos in Europe as a consequence of that and collateral damage. What exactly happened? Well, let's take a review of recent history. 20 years later, the Taliban, for God's sake, is still in charge in Afghanistan, all the stronger, even more so than when we arrived, with $80+ billion of U.S. military equipment that we left behind. Iraq, I would argue, is a more destabilized country, more vulnerable to Iranian incursion than before we showed up. So should we be willing to make a sacrifice, including the ultimate sacrifice for our country when required? Yes. But it better darn well to actually be to advance American interests rather than to undermine those same interests. And over the course of our conversation, a respectful challenge I would offer to Ambassador Bolton is to identify any one of the examples in which we have adopted an interventionist foreign policy in the last 20 years. Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Libya, Yemen, you could argue now Ukraine. What is a single example that we could point to where we've actually been successful in seeing that through? And I think the absence of a good answer to that question is a damning indictment of the foreign policy interventionism of the last 20 years. But to those who wouldn't find any of those arguments persuasive alone, let me leave you with one more, which is that this has distracted us from focusing on the ultimate national security threat that we actually do face, which we fail to confront, which is the rise of the Communist Party of China. There will be those who make the argument that this is apples and oranges, that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Well, again, I prefer to measure by the results. Right now, we're at the first time in modern American history in 2.5 decades where we don't have a carrier strike group in the Asia-Pacific region. And the reason why is we very recently sent the USS Lincoln to the Middle East. The last time we did it was in conjunction with our invasion of Afghanistan. We're $20 billion plus behind on military supplies supposed to be sent to Taiwan, at least a third of which were routed to Ukraine instead. We're talking about M1 Abrams tanks, we're talking about HIMARS, we're talking about Stingers, we're talking about coastal defense system, Harpoon coastal defense systems. At least $6.7 billion of that $20 billion that would have gone to Taiwan has gone to Ukraine instead. We have actually strengthened inadvertently the Russia-China alliance since the Ukraine war began, which puts China in a stronger position relative to the United States, while the United States itself is in a weaker position vis-a-vis China. And when we think about that model of international diplomacy, since that too is part of the resolution, I do think that the multilateral institutional model of diplomacy has failed us, especially in the 21st century, through the UN, through the WTO, and other multilateral international institutions, by increasing our dependence on China. One of the things I did learn, and I appreciated learning from your opening remarks, Ambassador, was I didn't know the fact that 90% of the gunpowder in the American Revolution came from France. But it wouldn't have made sense for 90% of that gunpowder to come from actually our adversary, which is the United Kingdom. Yet today, 40% of the semiconductors that power the Department of Defense actually come from China. 95% of certain of our pharmaceuticals come from China. Most of our military industrial base depends on our chief adversary, China, and that was directly achieved by the model of international diplomacy that was mediated through these so-called multilateral international institutions that created a false equivalence between the United States and China, a false economic equivalence through the climate change agenda that was disproportionately applied to the United States without being applied to China, a false moral equivalence as trading relationships with China created an increased dependence on China for our modern way of life, but also companies like BlackRock or Nike or Airbnb or JP Morgan who relentlessly criticize the United States without saying a peep about the actual human rights atrocities in places like China. And that undermines our greatest geopolitical asset of all, which is not our nuclear arsenal, actually. It is our moral standing on the global stage. And that is in part a direct function of diluting our resources that have been misspent on wars in other parts of the world, especially in the 21st century, over the period of which China achieved near parity, if not military parity now, with the United States. So those are the three points I'd like to leave you with over the course of the evening, is that first, the evidence suggests that the interventionist foreign policy of the 21st century has been nothing short of an abysmal failure. And my point in saying so is not to blame those in the past, but to learn from the mistakes of the past so that we may harness them to correct them in the future. The second point is that even if none of the arguments relating to the financial cost, the human cost, or the impact on Europe's mass migration crisis would convince you, at least be convinced by the fact that it has deterred, it has stopped us and diluted our ability to deter the number one threat that we actually do face, which is the rise of the Communist Party of China. And that the model of diplomacy over the last 20 years, over the last several decades, dependent on multilateral institutions governing our diplomatic relationships with other countries, has failed the best interests of the United States by actually increasing our dependence on the very adversary we should seek to deter for our own national security. And it's for those reasons that I hope you're persuaded over the course of the evening that the model of the United States serving as that global policeman does not actually advance the best interests of the United States, and that even though I respect Ambassador Bolton's commitment to the goal of making the United States stronger and share it, my method of getting there is far different. Thank you very much for the warm welcome, and I look forward to the conversation. Thank you very much.
Having heard that, Thomas, I want to follow up quickly on a couple of points that I want to tie together what RFK said with regard to what is happening in Ukraine with the money and the land grab that is happening, that there's this huge money laundering scheme between the taxpayers of the United States citizens and the people or the companies that are supplying the weapons to Ukraine, that those companies are becoming enriched because of our taxpayer money. It's not that we're just deciding to invest in them. It's that the United States government is deciding to use those weapons or allow them to be used by Ukrainians and choosing to use our money to purchase them from those companies, thereby enriching those companies. So it's a transfer of wealth there, which is in another phrase called money laundering. Another issue is that the amount of, if it were true, now this is alleged, and this is what I've looked up on my own, and I'm not the greatest at the geology, and I've never visited Ukraine, but if it's true that the same amount of property, agricultural land, has been purchased by foreign countries from Ukraine as is occupied currently by Russia, hasn't it already lost? And had they entered into an agreement, which from all accounts, they were on the verge of entering into that agreement before Boris, what's his name, Johnson,
mm-hmm.
from Ukraine, as you know, the
UK?
Yeah, UK.
Mm-hmm.
That he intervened and the Biden administration intervened and said, no, you don't need to settle. You don't need to negotiate because we have your back. And therefore perpetuating this war that, although it may have halted the progression of the Russian troops, it has leveled the infrastructure of Ukraine. And so even after the war, even if Russia were to retreat back to its former boundaries,
mm-hmm.
Ukraine is destroyed. And somebody's going to repair it. And who's that going to be? It's probably going to be companies that are not Ukrainian,
mm-hmm.
that are mostly from the United States or other Western powers, and they are going to be enriched by rebuilding Ukraine and imposing loans or some type of repayment program. It's not going to be like the reconstruction of Europe and Japan, where the Marshall Plan actually allowed it to be reconstructed without any strings attached,
mm-hmm.
or very little at least, and allowed those countries to become independent and powerful on their own and successful, but with strings attached, so the Western interests are going to be significantly advanced, probably more advanced than any Russian interest would be in maintaining the territory that it's occupied.
Sure. Yeah, I'm not here to defend the Ukraine-Russian war because I think it's a mess, but I do think it's an outgrowth of something that could have been solved a much cleaner and easier way beforehand, I think like you alluded to with these diplomatic talks and maybe even going back further into like the Crimea annexation, doing something diplomatic about that, whether that's economic sanctions or whatever.
And there were sanctions placed on Russia, sure. but Russia has not really conceded any yeah. type of military force because of sanctions. They've never mm-hmm. said, okay, we're going to back off because mm-hmm. of that. It seems like Russia always finds a way to get what it wants to do unless it's faced with power. But what I see has happened in Ukraine is we haven't given them enough force to win the war. We've mm-hmm. only given them enough force to perpetuate the war. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the consequence of the West profiting from this war is an unintended consequence. I mm-hmm. think it was vastly calculated and foreseen mm-hmm. in making the determination as to what to provide Ukraine and what to hold back from Ukraine in mm-hmm. fighting this war. And furthermore, with NATO, the purpose of NATO is to hem in the spread of communism through the Soviet Union. Well, guess what? Communism doesn't exist in the form of the Soviet Union anymore. So what's mm-hmm. the purpose of NATO? Well, if it's still to hem in communism, it's doing the complete opposite, because what it's doing is it's pushing Russia, which is not technically communist, but is certainly socialist and leaning and has a communist foundation, it's pushing it into a communist country's arms mm-hmm. and in an alliance that is actually expanding communism. So it's doing the complete opposite of its objective.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Deason, Garner & Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
Don't miss out. Deason, Garner & Hanson is hosting an estate planning seminar this October 11th at the Foothills Library. Doors open at 2 p.m. and we will start at 2:30. Achieve peace of mind and learn the importance of planning so you can avoid the consuming probate process.
Coming home from the hospital was incredibly sad and draining. I felt like I had lost so much.
Doctors told us our baby wouldn't survive.
Then those doctors told us they weren't allowed to help me.
That's Ashley and Vance from Mesa. And that's what happened to them because of Arizona's abortion ban. Women who are facing pregnancy complications are being forced to wait until their condition gets worse because doctors risk prison just for treating them.
I waited for days, terrified for my own health.
Watching my wife being forced to carry a baby that would not survive. Government had no right to do that to our family. Voting yes on Prop 139 ends the ban. To protect women and families in Arizona, families like Ashley and Vance, vote yes. Paid for by Arizona for Abortion Access. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's agent. Top donors, SEIU, Service Employees International Union, Planned Parenthood Action Fund, and SEIU, United Healthcare Workers West.
Country music star Lauren Elena live at the 12th annual Bridget's Gift Western Dance and Barbecue, sponsored in part by Barclay Ag and Alexander Automotive Group. Plus special guest Coffey Anderson.
The red, white, and blue for these stars and stripes.
Saturday, October 26th at Cocopah Casino. Dinner is included. Tickets at bridgetsgift.com.
Brought to you in part by Cocopah Casino, Foundation of Yuma Regional Medical Center, Naquin Precision Earth Moving, YRMC Cancer Center, Yuma Pest and Termite, 1 Hour Air Conditioning and Heating, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona, Alluvial Media LLC, Lamar, Entrevision, Dell Outdoor, Fox 9, 13 on your side, ABC 5, NBC 11, and 560 KBLU.
Did you know if you're an adult living with asthma or COPD, getting sick with pertussis may result in severe complications? Pertussis, or whooping cough, is a serious respiratory illness. Vaccination is the best way to help protect against pertussis. Speak to your healthcare provider to ensure you are up to date on your Tdap vaccination. Learn more at lung.org.
The preceding show on 560 KBLU was a paid program. All opinions expressed by the program participants are solely their current opinions and do not reflect the opinions of 560 KBLU, Eldorado Broadcasters LLC, their respective parent companies or affiliates, or the companies with which the program participants are affiliated and may have been previously disseminated by them. The program participants' opinions are based upon information they consider reliable, but neither 560 KBLU Eldorado Broadcasters LLC nor its affiliates, nor the companies with which such participants are affiliated, warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such.
This is News Talk 560 KBLU, Yuma.